let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Great to have you with us This Week in America. Frank Tarpeia has loved fairy tales since he was a child. Actually, he would often memorize them. Now he's the author of the highly praised fairy tale, The Princess Who Wept Diamonds, about a beautiful blind princess who suffers horribly from a Wiccan enchantment. Only true love can release her, but she's been so abused she really is afraid of love and thinks her unworthy of love herself. And in the end, well, it ends it like a fairy tale would end. Frank is a Harvard graduate, calls himself a loose member of Mensa and Intertel. The book is also about the love of animals and the wonderful love they shower on people. Frank Tarpeia, author of The Princess Who Wept Diamonds, joining us on This Week in America. Frank, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you very, very much. I'm very glad I'm with the program.
Well, I'm delighted that you're here. The fairy tale that we'll talk about in detail has got valuable lessons for everybody, and it's a typical fairy tale in that we really come away from that. It's a great story. We have a lesson or two as we go along the way, and we will talk about that as the interview unfolds. The book is The Princess Who Wept Diamonds. First of all, where did this idea come from the book? What was the inspiration in writing this?
Well, as you must know, a lot of the old fairy tales, especially the Brothers Grimm, were indeed kind of grim.
Yes.
But they spoke of timeless truth also. And I wanted to write a tale that would leave the world a better place or make people think a little bit. And a lot of the old stories, and my story certainly does, has child abuse, parental child abuse in it. Horrible. Horrible. And what a horrible thing it is. But sometimes the only way through a problem is to hold on to your principles and still be a good person. And that the princess certainly does. She's a very kind, loving, sweet person. And no matter all the traumas placed on her, she doesn't change. For the worse, she does. Personality-wise, she doesn't change. She becomes more adaptable with the help of a fairy godmother, but she doesn't essentially change. She remains good, and in the end, when she finally allows herself to accept the love of this handsome farm boy, the spell of weeping diamonds is erased. She weeps tears of joy. Then when he proposes to her. It ends with a happy marriage, but there's enough room for a sequel because the royal parents who originally caused the abuse are still, they presume that she died in some quicksand, but, you know, they're always looking for her because they want their supply of diamonds. And she's just afraid that someday they'll find her. She's going to have babies, twins, actually. And she's so afraid at the end of the story that they'll just swoop down on her and steal her babies for dynastic purposes. As well as being that
yes.
She is magical, they could be magical. So there's enough room for a sequel, too. And
that will make a lot of people happy that they're able to hear that and to continue the story and the themes that you've written so well about in the book, The Princess Who Wept Diamonds. I mentioned in the beginning this interest in fairy tales started at a young age for you. Talk about that. Why did you always like fantasy and fairy tales? What was it that interested you about that that particular genre?
There was a romantic theme to it. I don't know if kids today would really resonate with fairy tales, but back then it was when I grew up in the 50s. It was a time of innocence. And good always won out over evil, and the princess always married the prince,
yes.
Or an equivalent thereof. It hid themes. Well, I love the fantasy, I love the magic, and so on and so forth, but fairy tales, the genre of fairy tales reflected certain themes that we have, that we no longer have in our society. Fortunately, woman cannot, in our society anyway, a woman cannot be traded for a good bargain in marriage. You'll notice that in fairy tales, the king often rewards the hero with his daughter's hand in marriage, whether the girl likes it or not. And we've come away from that sort of argument, let us say. And in the ages when fairy tales were made, the early Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, even the Renaissance, and life was no bargain for women. They were their father's property. They were the parents' property to begin with, but especially their father's. At a certain age, they were given in marriage whether they wanted to marry or not. And in those days, before the Reformation, a young woman either married or she was, you know, forced into a nunnery, often against her will also. She had no choices in this matter. Right. And marriage itself was no bargain for her, unless she was very, very fortunate and actually fell in love with her husband. A guy could abuse his wife. Nothing was said to him. Let me see. Childbirth was a deadly ordeal for a lot of young women.
Yes.
Many women died in it. And they had no... I mean, there were some skilled midwives, but with the witch burnings and stuff, a lot of them disappeared. And it was just... Very often, women, if they survive childbirth, repeated childbirth, they succumb to other diseases because they were weakened by constant childbirth. But childbirth, having large numbers of children, was considered kind of necessary because it was an agrarian society. The children could always do chores and stuff. But also, just to have some kids live to maturity, the infant and child mortality rate was sometimes sky high. It was a very grim society that wove these fairy tales that for some light, for some fantasy, for some magic. But it hid a darker reality. Women were burned as witches just for being a little different. If they didn't have a child every year or whatever, they were, you know, God knows, she might have tried some sort of birth control. She could be burned alive as a witch for that. It was just a very, very bad time.
Well, it certainly were. You don't often think about that, but as the story's unfolding, you know, you do, and you realize how things have fortunately changed over the centuries, how things were.
Women had no rights. They couldn't own property.
Yeah,
only their husbands could own property. If they wanted to sell a place, they had to have their, unless they were a widow, they had to have the husband's name on the deed. Our fathers, excuse me.
Yes.
It was a terrible, terrible time. Even in the highest nobility and royalty, life wasn't all that great, and childbirth was still, there was that beautiful young queen, Jane Seymour, Henry VIII's third wife. She had the best doctors in the land, yet she still died of a puerperal childbed fever at the end of a very difficult labor. She still died, even though with the so-called best of care.
Yes.
It was just, very often girls weren't taught basic literacy. I had a grandmother from Italy of Italian stock. His father refused to have her learn to read and write because he didn't want her passing love letters to boys. I kid you not.
That's in today's society, it's hard to imagine, and obviously not that many generations ago when that was happening.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The woman didn't have that many rights in Italy either.
It's just amazing. With us, by the way, in the program, you're listening to This Week in America. Our website is thisweekinamerica.us. Frank Tropea is our guest on the program. That's Tropea, the book we're talking about, the fantasy, the fairy tale, The Princes Who Wept Diamonds, a novel by Frank Tropea. And it's available at Amazon. You can link on directly when you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, to get information and to order the book. As you're putting this together, you had the chance to create these characters, in particular the princess. What attributes, what qualities about her do you most admire that you were able to put into this character?
Well, as it comes a little bit later in the story, her bravery.
Yes.
When also her love for animals, just her being a kind, sweet, loving person despite everything that's done to her. When her father, she rescues a nearly drowned kitten from a well, and because she begins, the kitten gives her love, and she begins crying diamonds a little bit less, her father senses that, and he wants to kill a cat. And she can't accept that, so she breaks an engagement to a royal distant cousin who's clearly, this young man has quite a reputation for sadism. Her parents wanted to match her up to him, so she'd always be miserable. So anyway, she runs away from the engagement and saves her cat's life and runs out of the castle in disguise. She nearly dies in some quicksand, and an older woman, who actually turns out to be her fairy godmother, rescues her. They disguise themselves as gypsies. The fairy godmother calls herself Madame Zarina. What else? And they give the princess the name Belinda. And the fairy godmother brews herbs and sells the potions to townspeople and farm people for their ills, and often they work. Also, herbalism was often the only real medicine that they had. What the doctors did back then was just bleed people, burn them, cut them, yes. You know, so on and so forth. They had no idea what they were doing or what disease was, or how disease was called, the causation of diseases, or even how to cure them. Very often what these wise women did, they knew herbs. Very often they were curative. Not always, but they helped. They helped a great deal. Which was also why the doctors kind of got together and had the wise woman burnt up as witches. You know, competition.
Yes.
So
that's just an amazing story. I mean, it really is. And I mentioned in the beginning your love for animals, and you were able to incorporate that in a very touching way as well.
Well, if that kitten hadn't come along, I really think that the princess might have just given up, period.
Yes.
You know, and it's just amazing how much love these little creatures can give us and how healing. Even they've noticed that with prisoners, these traumatized, brutalized prisoners, if they're given these animals to take care of, dogs or whatever, so they often rehabilitate the prisoners. It's the wonderful healing power of unconditional love, which is kind of a magic in itself. So, you know, and they've taken dogs and cats around to rest homes, and the people really come around to them. The people really
respond.
To these people, it's the power of love and acceptance.
And that's what we unfold with the princes in the book, The Princes Who Wept Diamonds, a novel by Frank Chaupia. And time going by way too quickly. It's a really fascinating read and will give you a number of themes. It's a book that that will touch people of all ages. In developing the characters, you really give us a pretty good a cross-section there, don't you? We've got the princes, we've got the parents who are really bad people. What was it like drawing out these characters and putting them in the book to tell the story? Because with all the characters, you've done an excellent job of giving us a very good picture of who they are.
Well, I was kind of like debating with myself, should I make the parents as bad as they really are?
Yes.
I mean, children would be reading that. Could that give them nightmares? But a lot of the fairy tales, especially by the Brothers Grimm, were indeed rather terrible. I mean, you know, very dark, actually. I mean, in the original Cinderella, you know, the stepmother cuts off the toes or heels of her own daughter, real daughters, to fit them into the glass slipper that the Cinderella has. And then at the wedding, these ravens or birds peck out the stepsister's eyes. I mean,
yes.
It is like, Okay. Well,
when you go back and you think these through, it's like, yeah, those were, you sort of think fairy tales, and you get this ending and you're thinking, okay, everything works out okay. But that journey to get to okay, that was pretty that was pretty brutal, wasn't it?
Well, the Wicked Queen and Snow White, I mean, you know, she went to Snow White's wedding, Snow White told the king, who the prince's father, who this woman really was, and the father had red hot iron shoes put on the queen's feet, and she danced a while in agony and then collapsed dead. I mean, granted, she was a very wicked witch, but still.
Exactly. Wow, I tell you, when you put this all in perspective and explain all of this, Frank, I'm going to have nightmares tonight. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to sleep too well. And going back through some of these that were classics.
Well, it's just that Disney, I'm not saying what Disney did was wrong, because this was for children after all, but he had to glamorize them and tone the darker elements down. But in this fairy tale, I wanted to portray how bad materialism is. And while I know we all have to pay our bills and everything, we become a really hedonistic, materialistic society to our great cost, I think. There are other things. So you have a bad day. If you have a dog, a cat, that can make all the difference. Or if you have children who love you. You know, we all have bills to pay. I understand that. But as long as you have your basic health, some means of making a living, and love in your life, I mean, what else do you need?
Yeah, and you bring those themes out in the book, The Princes Who Wept Diamonds. The author of the book, Frank Tropea, is our guest on the program. A couple minutes left. Let's talk about the actual process of writing this. Were there any particular challenges you faced in putting the story together?
Not really, but I was just kind of afraid of portraying the parents as bad as they were. But like when the queen is told that her daughter drowned in quicksand, the princess had cried at the quicksand, and the tears were diamonds, actually. And Snivy, this awful courtier, grabbed up the diamonds for himself. And the king says, "Give me the diamonds, Snively." And the queen says, "Give me two or three. Do you remember my daughter by?" And she breaks down and says, "What will we tell Philip, that awful prince whom they were going to wed her to, the sadist?" I mean, these are parents from hell.
Exactly, yes.
So, I mean, how realistic did I didn't want to give kids nightmares, but unfortunately, just read the papers. Look at the news. This sort of thing happens every day.
Yeah, and we're sort of desensitized to a certain extent by everything that we see, and I'm not sure what's really shocking anymore. So that's what makes this nice to get away to have this story, and we get to see some of these positive qualities that unfold in the book, The Princes Who Wept Diamonds. And you mentioned working on a sequel. How do you stand on that now? Are you actually involved in writing that? Are you finished? Where are you?
Well, I have the idea for the sequel in mind. I worked out some of the plot, but I haven't set pen to it yet. I'm writing this different book. The book that I'm writing now is called Go Ask the Dead. I think it might be released next year. And it's a ghost story that takes place in the Deep South. And it's about this girl who's born with clairvoyance and mediumistic talents. She can see and talk to the dead and interact with them. And being as she was very neglected by her mother, who was murdered, she makes the friends with this Confederate officer who died at Gettysburg. And he becomes her lover. And she embarks on a passionate affair with William. Now, she's rapturously in love with him and doesn't care about, you know, possible consequences, and she's warned about them. But things do turn dark, and ultimately, the only one who saves her is this boy that she married for a short while, and he still loves her. So he rescues her, but she also rescues herself from these negative spirits. Because she does have, oh, yeah, there's witchcraft in the family, and she does have those powers, too.
Interesting.
So it's mostly, I would say, I really wouldn't want any children reading it because it's kind of kinky, but it's certainly for young adults and adults today. Oh, yes, I think they'd enjoy some parts of it.
Well, good luck with that, and we'll please keep us posted on that. We'd love to talk about that. And the sequel to the book we've talked about on the interview today, The Princess Who Wept Diamonds, it's written by author Frank Tropea. His last name is spelled T-R-O-P-E-A. You'll find it available at Amazon.com. If you link onto our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you will go directly to the Amazon link. Frank, you're a very talented writer. I love what you were able to do with Princess Who Wept Diamonds. An excellent job on this particular book. Looking forward to more from you. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Anytime. Yes, please. It was very delightful talking to you. And I think we'll talk again sometime next year.
We'd love to do that to stay on
Not even next year, possibly in April about the new book.
Oh, okay. That's a few months away, so I'll be looking forward to that. I can't wait to captured my attention on that as well. So we'll have Frank back on the program. The book, once again, The Princess Who Wept Diamonds. Information available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.